Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome to, this is a good news segment, but it's also a very informative segment. I've got Sherry Criso joining me here today, RN, certified nurse, midwife, you name it. But the most important thing I want to say about Sherry is that she doesn't feel like this, probably I do. I cannot believe we are talking about what we're getting ready to talk about today. Every time I think that we have made some incredible progress in women and women's rights, I am so reminded by my colleagues, Pat, have you lost your mind? We still haven't passed an equal rights amendment for women. Mm-hmm. Haven't done it. Did you forget that battle that you once took when you were like a youngster? So today, we're going to talk about what a survey reveals. You know, this is a big topic and it's an important one because I actually consider it success manipulation when we take working moms and we start to look at how they are affected in the workplace when they are actually utilizing their rights. So today, a survey reveals some new working moms are having their workload altered. Why? What? What? Why? Well, look. This is something that many people don't want to talk about. But think about this. Think about it for yourself. Think about it for your children. And think about it for your grandchildren. Does anybody even know whether or not moms have any breastfeeding rights? And if you do, do you know what they are? Well, we're going to take this on today. But there's also a fabulous study that was done. Sherry, great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. And you're right. It is such an important topic.
Yeah. I made this comment the other day. I work with young women, and I brought up the ERA, right? The Equal Rights Amendment. Mm-hmm. And I brought up because I don't know who mentioned it on air in some debate or something, but somebody said, yeah, that's the first thing we're going to do. And I mentioned it to young women, and they said, why do we want to support gun control? And I said, no, not the NRA. The ERA. So we are we're in a time warp right here, and that's why we have to talk about this. First of all, we don't even know what our rights are. Secondly, we don't even know what we're not getting. And third, we don't know that, as you mentioned, and you're going to talk about, that the Affordable Care Act, by the way, which saved my health care personally, is not only on the chopping block, but it's like the chicken with the head already running around. So,
right.
What the heck is going on?
Right. It's really awful. I mean, honestly, I feel the same way as you. I've been taking care of women for 30 years. And every time I think we've made strides and it's getting better, I look at a survey like this that came out, and to see that all these women, 1 in 5, aren't even aware of their rights, don't even know what their rights are under the Affordable Care Act, what kind of protections they have regarding breastfeeding in the workplace. And they're going back to work without this knowledge. So if they don't have the knowledge, how can they ever advocate for themselves? And they're not. And they're actually, like you said, seeing their work hours being cut, employers taking advantage or not knowing even what those rights or legal obligations they have to women. And this is just one more form of discrimination against women and even harassment. I mean, we saw in the survey that most of the working moms, 66%, said they experienced some kind of frustration or embarrassment while they were at work because they needed to pump, and that people were walking, other coworkers were walking in on them, making rude comments to them, telling them to stop or telling them to breastfeed somewhere else, to pump somewhere else. And that's harassment. And, you know, women are trying to just juggle it all. We live in a country where we don't provide extended maternity leaves for women to be able to stay home and breastfeed their babies. So then we need to provide, which we do. We have these laws and we have these benefits in place, but we don't tell them about it and we don't enforce it. And that's part of why we did why this research was done and why Byram Healthcare sponsored this.
Well, I mean, we're at the tip. I don't even know how to talk about this, Sherry. We're not even at the tip of the iceberg. I'm sitting there,
yeah,
and I plug into what the debates say and what everybody's talking about. And I listened last night and the night before to what they're talking about. And I was holding my breath for one of the people up there, somebody to talk about women's rights. And, you know, I think we danced around the issue. I mean, are we so uninformed that we just, it's not even on our radar? But let's talk about something even more important, right? It's not even that we're so uninformed. I think there's so much propaganda that make us believe we actually already have rights that we actually don't have.
That's true. That's true. You know, so we don't think about it till we're actually in it and we're being discriminated ourselves or not getting what we need. And then there's the rights that we do have that we just don't know, or even if we do know about them, we feel too intimidated to actually fight for ourselves.
Let's talk about them, because this is part of what the survey has brought to the forefront. You know, I love surveys. Mm-hmm. I'm a researcher myself. So anytime we can ask people questions and then provide answers.
Yeah.
Byram Healthcare, first of all, is one of the groups that have come forth to help with this. But a survey is worth its weight in gold. What did you find?
Yeah. So we surveyed 1,000 nationally U.S. women, working women with kids under the age of 2, who are breastfeeding or have recently breastfed. And we found that the majority of them, did not know their benefits under the law regarding breastfeeding, that more than half of them had their workloads cut because they were breastfeeding, even though they didn't want that or didn't ask for that. And that were frustration, embarrassment, like we discussed before. You know, what I felt was that when I read this was that, you know, employers need to be educated. I mean, they're the forefront. They need to be providing this information, not just to their breastfeeding employees or their expecting mom employees, but every employee within their employment needs to know what the rights are of these women and why, and providing those private spaces and doing all the things that they're supposed to be doing under the law. And women need to be educated. And one of the things that I loved that we did together, I did with Byram Healthcare, was not only the survey, but then some sort of support and action now, which is they can go to the website, and we created a Working Mom's Guide to Breastfeeding Toolkit, which provides all of those benefits and rights under the law that you can download. It all comes together along with all kinds of guidance about what kind of breast pump you should look for and that's going to work for you and your working situation, as well as a lot of tips and advice that I've given to moms to be able to succeed with breastfeeding. There's so much common knowledge, that basic knowledge about physiology, about their bodies, about breastfeeding, that we don't talk about. And there's just this huge stigma surrounding breastfeeding, which is just ridiculous, you know, because it has the word breast in it. Somehow, people don't want to talk about it. But what we're talking about is feeding children and health and having good health outcomes. That's what we're talking about.
And you know,
you can go right.
Yeah, but let's talk about this, because I think, you know, what we're talking about here also goes beyond this. It is one of the most intimidating and almost, I mean, for me, there's such a borderline around this that's just so inhumane. But, you know, ask me if I'm surprised.
Are you surprised?
I'm not surprised, because, you know, look, I'm not surprised. I studied the consequences of broken promises for 10 years. I know what happens when you do that. But I also know that we forget one thing in the midst of the Me Too movement and everything. What we forget is that this is a gigantic effort for women and moms in particular to stand up for themselves. I mean, I think you're touching upon it a little bit, because there are serious consequences in the workplace. And I don't know who came up with the idea that moms don't need to work. Who was that? Yep. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, because the majority do need to work. They're supporting their families. And They do need to work, and it isn't easy. And anyone who thinks that breastfeeding and pumping and going to work and bringing your milk back and forth, that somehow this is an easy thing, it's not. They should be respected, and they should be applauded, and they should be supported as much as possible. It's not easy.
Yeah, and you know, let's talk about what we can do to help. First of all, let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
What can working moms do to advocate for themselves? Because I think there are two parts to this. First of all, I don't know that working mom knows that they can advocate for themselves. So I think that's where we got to start. I don't think they know they can.
Absolutely. Knowledge. The knowledge is the most important thing. They need to first know what their rights are and then start from there.
Okay. Yeah. Now that they know. Go ahead.
How would they know? That's why we tried to make it easier. I mean, the information is available, but if you don't know to look for it, you may not know to find out. So the toolkit really does provide you with everything you do need to know in a very nice, concise way, with also pocket guides and things that you could carry with you, because this is not just about the workplace. There are legal rights that women need to know about, their breastfeeding rights. You see it on the news every day, somebody being harassed in a Target or a mall or somewhere that they're breastfeeding and being harassed about it. Women have rights to breastfeed in any public and private place in all 50 states. And they need to know that. They shouldn't feel intimidated, although they do. And it's all of us, even the ones for us who are not breastfeeding, to be encouraging moms. When you see a mom, encourage them. Tell them, good job. You know, let them know that there are a lot of people who support what they're doing. And then there's always power in numbers, too. Find a support group. Talk to other breastfeeding moms. Get together, because it's hard to do this by yourself. It's hard.
It is hard. And, you know, part of the other thing that I want to say, and this is where I come in. This is the thing that most of my life, I'm a bit older than you, so I've been around. You know, I've been at a number. I've probably been at more protest marches and more rallies than people can even imagine. Because when we started to come out and speak out, this was back in a time when you marched in Alabama, when you marched against the war, marching was the what we now know Twitter. Marching was the Twitter of that age.
But, very much so. Yes.
But here's what you can do if you're not a mom, or you're not a mom in this situation. If you see an event of harassment to a mom that is doing what her right is to do, we have to get more involved. Mm-hmm. We cannot turn a blind eye to this. And boy, I'll tell you, we are doing that across the country right now. So we have got to speak up for others that perhaps may or may not be able to speak up for themselves at any given point in time.
Absolutely. It's a really vulnerable time for a woman. And as a new mom, especially leaving her baby, it's emotional, all of it. There's so much happening. So yes, I love what you're saying, and I agree. We all need to speak up and say something if you see somebody being harassed, or it's, you know, it's either that or encouraging them when you do see it happening. So
Okay. A lot of information. I know you've got a lot of interviews you're doing. I want to make sure that we have information for people to look at. How can they look at the survey? How can they find out their rights? Because we are talking about legal protection here.
Federal laws, legal protection. Best place to go is ByramHealthcare.com. They can download the toolkit for free. They can get all the information in that toolkit, and they can also get their no-cost breast pump right there as well. So they can just insert their information, their insurance information, and get their pump. So all of it in one place.
I love it. I have one last question for you, Sherry. Thank you for joining me today. What's your personal message? What do you want to leave us with?
Oh, my personal message is, you know, we are responsible for our own health, and we need to take back our control of our health. And we are responsible not just for ourselves, but for everyone else. And I loved what you said about whether you're a breastfeeding mom, or you know somebody who is, or you don't, but you have a daughter or a sister. It is all of our, it's in all of our best interests and to be able to be advocating for this. It matters. Babies' lives are depending on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. And we have to bust the illusion right now that, moms have the luxury of not working. We just got to bust that. That is so not the reality of today's world.
Not the reality. It's so not the reality. Yeah. And so we need to support them in every way we can. Thank you so much for doing this.
Rock on. Thank you so much. Thank you. Hey, everybody. Short break. We'll
be right back.
Yeah, this is it. This one. Get out there like Sherry. Get out there. We'll be right back.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class Facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our good news segment. Now, look, this is actually really good news. Dr. Kristen Higgins is joining us here today. Why? Because I love to talk with each of you about hope. And sometimes when you say the word cancer, it doesn't always come with the word hope. But today we're going to talk about a treatment which does give hope to patients. And Dr. Higgins, of course, is that person that is bringing the message forward, right? So when we think about the work that we do in our world, when we think about who we are, when we think about the people that are showing up to talk about this, we think about folks that have a passion and a purpose to make sure that each and every one of us understands that there is something on the other side of a rainbow. Dr. Higgins, thank you for joining me here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So look, you have been sort of in the evolution, should I say, of lung cancer, or in the evolution of progression of solutions in this arena. But, you know, this is something also that you have been present and purposeful about. I want to ask you this question. Is it just me, or are we now seeing some breakthroughs that seem like in the past year or two, kind of like trump or accumulate some of the breakthroughs that have been made in previous years? Is that just me, or is there something exciting going on here?
There is something exciting going on in lung cancer. And, you know, these are the sorts of breakthroughs that we don't see very often. Mm-hmm. I will say that I think in general, there is such a stigma with the diagnosis of lung cancer. And many patients, when they hear that word, they will throw in the towel and say, well, there's no hope. Should I even get treatment? And my message to you is absolutely, you should get treatment, because the treatment is better. It is so much better. We're curing more patients. Our patients are living longer. And I want to make sure that people know this information, and that it's getting broadly disseminated, and that you're talking about it in your living room and saying, well, if those treatments would have been around for, you know, my dad, then he could have done better. And I have a particular passion for stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer. And what that means is that the cancer is in the lymph nodes in your chest, but it hasn't yet spread outside of your chest. Mm-hmm. And we have a great new treatment paradigm for stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer. And what that involves is giving radiation and chemotherapy together for 6 weeks, and then giving a drug called Imfinzi, which is a type of immunotherapy. And what immunotherapy does is it causes your immune system to attack the cancer. And it's a different approach than what we've used in the past. It's not chemotherapy that comes in there and kills your cancer cells and your good cells. This is using your own immune cells to fight the cancer. And it's been a breakthrough. For these patients, this approach has been shown to reduce the risk of death from lung cancer by 32%. And that's tremendous.
Yeah. The other thing I want to talk about with this is, and of course, this is not the interview for this, but, you know, in my own healing journey, one of the things I learned is, and believe me, I'm a girl from New York, so what I'm about to say is about as far-fetched for somebody like me to even be talking about. I learned that there is part of the body that loves to heal itself. And for us to look at that, you know, we have to strengthen some things. But in your case, what you're saying is the strengthening of things is that you're not taking an additional toll on the good cells. And that's really a mega breakthrough.
It is, because what cancer does is it tricks your immune system into not recognizing it.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. And so this Imfinzi is causing your immune system to say, wait a minute, this is a cancer. You're not supposed to be here. Let's do what we're supposed to do. And so it's sort of a different approach. And, you know, to your point, this, I think, feels better to a lot of patients because they don't feel like they're destroying their body.
Yeah. You know, let's stop for a minute and give out the website, because I've spent a lot of time on this website and I've looked at what you're saying, and I looked at, you know, really for me to understand it without the conversation with you, I wasn't completely getting it, but it does give people a lot of information. So can you please tell folks how they're going to be able to find out more about this?
Sure. So to find out more about Imfinzi for stage 3 lung cancer, you can go to Imfinzi.com. You can also talk with your healthcare providers to see if you're a candidate for this treatment. There are other great websites, too, with good content for lung cancer. I would recommend the National Cancer Institute website, also the American Cancer Society, and there's a great advocacy group called Longevity that also has great content as well.
Okay, so let's get down into some things that people should pay attention to, because I think this is where the real... let's just say this is where the real vision comes in, because if we can't recognize the signs up front in this time period that folks have, then we're not really giving them enough information. So let's talk about some of the signs, because when I went through this, doctor, what happened to me is I said, wow, that doesn't sound like that. That just sounds like a cold. So can you go through this and tell us, you know, what we should know, what we should ask, and what we should be aware of for the symptoms, even if our healthcare provider doesn't pick them up?
Sure. So any unexplained and rapid weight loss can be a sign of cancer, particularly lung cancer. We see that rapid weight loss pretty frequently. You know, a cough that's not responding to you know, antibiotics or steroid medications. Sometimes something as vague as shoulder pain can be a lung cancer. I've had quite a few patients diagnosed after shoulder pain that just won't go away. So if you have a symptom, any symptom that is recurrent and persistent and is not going away, then you need to push your team and say, look, I really think maybe I need a CT scan to look further into this. And that's typically how we diagnose lung cancer, is from a CT scan. And that's really the advice that I would give. But one other thing that I want to drill down on is, once you've been diagnosed with the lung cancer, it's very critical to make sure that your doctors are assigning the right stage to your cancer.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah, because many times patients will have an 8-centimeter tumor and they'll be in the hospital because of breathing problems, and you know, they'll be assumed to have a stage 4 lung cancer when in fact they don't. And you really need to do all of the workup, the whole body PET scan and brain MRI, to make sure that you're not putting somebody into the stage 4 non-curable category when they do indeed have a curable stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer. And I really want to bring that point home. And I want you as a patient or a caregiver to go in and say, what have you done to accurately stage my cancer? And you can demand that, and you should. That's a way to advocate for yourself to make sure that you're getting the correct treatment.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I've talked about a gazillion times, and I'm going to say it again right now, having been down this road with friends and family, one of the things that has helped significantly is this: don't go alone. Don't go alone. Mm-hmm. Bring family, bring friends. Write down your questions before you get there. Hand them off to a friend of yours and make sure that they can come in and ask these questions and advocate for you. Because you know this, right, Dr. Higgins? When you're in the middle of a crisis, do any of us remember any of this?
No, no, you're absolutely right. You need as many, you need a team for yourself. Absolutely. And another point that I want to bring up that you can ask when you're there visiting with your cancer team, say to your team, what are the most recent developments in the last 2 years for my stage of cancer? Tell me what those are. And if they're not recommending that for you, then that's sort of a red flag. And you want to make sure that you're getting state-of-the-art treatment.
Yeah. Isn't that an interesting question? And can I say this? That question you just talked about is perhaps one of the most important. And here's the thing that we've talked about on this show a lot. We even did a panel on this, you know, with psychologists. And, you know, that's my area of expertise. The deal for people is this is not the time to be intimidated by your doctor and doctor team. This is not
that
time, right? This is where you have to stand up and say, I've got more questions. Don't you think that's so important for people?
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is your life. I mean, this is, you have to bring everything to the table, leave no stone unturned. And you just, you need to go in there and have an honest conversation, human to human. This isn't about, you know, your doctor having more knowledge than you. This is about your life. And, you know, you need to have as honest and transparent of a conversation as you possibly can.
What, why, I gotta ask you a question. This, I don't know if, how much they told you about me. I've been doing this for 15 years, and my show is about human potential. It started because I was at the worst point in time in my life when everybody around me thought I should be at the top of the world, and I wasn't. But there was a purpose to why I wasn't. And I want to ask you that question. Here you are. You're doing a lot of interviews. You're out there. You want to make a difference. What is it that got under your skin for you that got you pointed in this direction to be such an advocate?
That's a great question. And it's I'll try to sum it up in just a few sentences.
Yeah.
I think that with whatever challenges you have in life, there's certainly different ways of relating to them. And it's about your perspective. And your perspective can be changed by the people that you're around and the people that are shepherding you through that experience. And my job as a doctor is to shepherd patients with cancer through their treatment. And to the extent that I can reframe their experience, I mean, that's, there's such potential in that. I can do so much for the patient and their family if I can help them have hope. And even when people are dying, you can help people die with dignity. And that's a really powerful job. And that's really what I think drew me to this field.
Yeah, it is powerful. Look, I know we have a few more minutes. I want to ask you just sort of a summary question. One, I want to ask you, are we making progress in the survival rate? And number two, what do you think some of the challenges are for physicians and patients that are looking at this kind of treatment or looking at this kind of diagnosis? So they're kind of two related. They're two questions, but they really are related.
Sure. So absolutely, we are making improvements in survival rates. Patients with lung cancer are living longer across the board because of these breakthroughs, largely due to immunotherapy. For that stage three patient population that we were talking about, with Imfinzi, we're able to reduce the risk of death from lung cancer by 32%, and that's really, really meaningful and profound.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Now, yeah, but nonetheless, there are still barriers to patients getting this treatment, and a lot of it, I think, is back to the way that patients internalize their diagnosis and the stigma that has been associated with lung cancer. So many times patients don't want to be a burden on their family members or their caregivers, and they won't seek them out. I'll literally have patients say they don't want treatment because they're worried about how to get to radiation every day, and they feel that they're a burden. And, you know, it's important that, you know, family members and caregivers are telling that cancer patient, no, you are not a burden. This is what we're here for. Because there's a lot of emotions and guilt, I think, that cancer patients have when they're trying to figure out how they can make it through treatment successfully. And that makes me, that saddens me a lot when I see it playing out with families.
Yeah, I find that especially true of lung cancer. I'm not saying it's not true of the other cancers, but I find it especially true of lung cancer for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, no, I do too. And again, still that stigma, that belief that there's nothing that can be done, that's one of the major barriers. And that's what I'm trying to change by talking with you today and disseminating this information to the general public, is that that's really not true. Lung cancer is different. We have new treatments, and we can help you get through this.
Yeah. One more time with the website. Let's spell it for people, if you don't mind, Doctor.
Sure. So to learn more about immunotherapy in the stage three lung cancer setting, you can go to imfinzi.com, Imfinzi.
All right. So what I want to say in ending this up, Doctor, is this. You know, the area of work that I do, there's a body of work I do around hope. And I've really struggled with what that means. And here's what I've come to know about it and want to share with you, because you're right on about it. So once upon a time, I couldn't put my finger on what the word hope meant. And today, here's what it means to me, having struggled with the disease for 10 years. It's having optimistic possibilities every day, H-O-P-E, having optimistic possibilities every day. And what you're talking about is making sure that happens here, is to really stay on the possibility solution. And that's what it sounds like this does for people.
Absolutely. And thanks for that definition. I definitely will take that back home and use it in my practice.
Yeah. And actually, the work I do with people every day, they have to come up with 10 of these every day if you work with me, right?
Yeah. That's
Thank
really
you.
Neat.
Thank you so very much. And, you know, Ted, this is not in the recording, but get her some water, okay? Thank you, everybody. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.